That's suicide, Ella. There's too many. Olivia roars in pain. She whips her head at her sides and back, trying to crush or bite the black crawls that have blanketed her. Creighton aims his gun at the beasts, but he lowers his weapon when he realizes he would most likely shoot Olivia in the process. He and Hector, instead, fire on the army of Mogadorians lining up and preparing for a new attack. Olivia wavers left and right, howls at the mountains, and backs herself up into the middle of the lake, and slowly sinks in a wave of red. The crawls detach and swim towards the Mogadorians.
No!
I hear Creighton yell above the chaos. I watch him try to enter the lake, but Hector pulls him back onto the shore.
Duck!
Ella screams, pulling me down by the arm. A whoosh of air passes over us. A giant black hoof smashes the ground next to me, and I look up to see a horned monster. Its head is as large as Hector's truck, and when the giant roars, my hair flaps in my face.
Come on!
I yell. We race towards the trees.
Split up!
Ella says. I nod and dart left, towards an ancient beech tree with gnarled limbs. I set the chest down and instinctively lift my hands and then pull them apart. To my surprise, the beech trunk opens, creating a hollow space that looks just big enough for two people and a chest to fit. I look over my shoulder to see the creature chasing Ella through a dense line of trees. I toss the chest in the open trunk, and with telekinesis, I pick up two trees and send them like missiles at the creature's back. They splinter against its dark skin with a loud crash, knocking it to its knees. I run and grab Ella's shaking hand, pulling her in the other direction. The beech tree, with my chest, comes into view.
The tree, Ella! Get inside!
I yell. She sits atop the chest and tries to make herself as compact as she can, shrinking down to a younger age.
That's a pikin, Marina! Get in!
She pleads, and before she can say another word, I close the trunk up around her, leaving just enough room so she can see.
I'm sorry,
I say through the small crevice, hoping the giant didn't see where I've stashed the chest and hidden my friend. I turn and run, trying to lead the pikin away, but it soon catches up and knocks me from behind. The force of the hit is shocking, and I fall down a steep slope until my arm finds a boulder to hook around. I look over my shoulder to see that I'm less than a meter from a rocky cliff. The pikin appears at the top of the slope. There, it shuffles sideways until it's positioned directly above me. It roars so loudly, my mind blanks. I hear Ella scream my name in the distance, but I can't breathe, let alone yell back. It marches down the slope. I raise one of my hands and uproot a small spindly tree near me and launch it at the giant's chest. It impales its chest, and it's enough for the pikin to lose its footing, and it falls sideways, shrieking and barreling right at me. I close my eyes and prepare for the impact, but instead of smashing me under its weight and knocking me over the cliff, its body hits the boulder I'm holding onto, and then bounces over me. I whip my head over my shoulder to see the pikin fall down the rocky cliff. I'm finally able to concentrate enough to float myself up the slope. I hurry back towards the beech tree, to Ella and my chest, and I hear the cannons blast a split second before I'm shot. The pain is double anything I've felt before, and all I can see is red and flashes of white. I roll around uncontrollably, writhing in agony.
Marina!
I hear Ella scream. I roll onto my back and stare at the sky. Blood drips out of my mouth and nose. I can taste it. I can smell it. A few birds circle overhead. As I wait to die, I watch as the sky is taken over by a colossal group of dark, heavy clouds. The clouds crash and roll on top of each other, pulsing as if they're breathing. I think I'm hallucinating, seeing visions before I die. When a massive drop of water hits me on the right cheek, I blink as another hits me above my eyes. And then a bolt of lightning splits the sky in two. A huge Mogadorian in gold and black armor stands over me, smiling. He presses a cannon against my temple and spits on the ground. But before he pulls the trigger, he looks up at the looming storm. I quickly place my hands on the gaping wound in my abdomen, feeling the icy familiarity surge under my skin. Then the oncoming rain washes over me as the clouds become a solid wall of darkness.
Chapter 31. By the look on Sam's face, I can tell he's just about lost all faith in getting out of here alive. My own shoulders sag as I stare into the massive white eyes of the beast that's rising to its feet in front of us. It takes its time, stretching its muscular neck, veins as thick as Roman columns protruding on both sides. The dark skin on its face is dry and cracked, like the stone jutting above its head. With its long arms, it has the look of an alien gorilla. By the time the giant has pushed itself into a full standing position, 50 feet tall, the handle of my dagger has melted itself around my right hand. "Flank it!" I yell. Sam runs left, and I dart right. Its first move is towards Sam, who immediately turns and runs along the circular edge of the moat. The beast lumbers after him, and that's when I sprint towards it and slide my dagger right and left, cutting small chunks from its calves. It rears its head and smashes its nose against the ceiling, and then swings a hand down at me, one of its fingers connecting with my back leg. I'm sent spinning into the wall, where I land on my left shoulder, dislocating it. "John!" Sam yells. The giant swings for me again, but I'm able to jump out of the path of its fist. The giant may be powerful, but it's slow. Still, the cave we're in is not large enough to run very far, so, slow or not, it still has the advantage. I don't see Sam anywhere as I stagger from boulder to boulder. The giant has a hard time following me, and once I figure I have enough time, I slowly raise my left arm above my head and rotate my hand so my palm is on the back of my head. The pain shoots from my neck to my heels, and before I give into it, I keep reaching and feel my dislocated shoulder pop back into place. A sense of relief comes over me, but it's short-lived as I look up to see the giant's palm right above my head. I raise my dagger, and its blade punctures the beast's palm, but it's not enough to stop it from wrapping its fingers around me. It picks me up, and the strength of its squeeze causes the dagger to fall to the ground. I hear its diamond blade clang, and as I'm turned upside down, I search for it so I can use my telekinesis to retrieve it. "Sam, where are you?" I'm disoriented as the beast turns me right side up again, and it holds me a few feet above its nose. Then I see Sam emerge from a fissure in the wall. He runs and picks up my blade, and a second later, the giant squeals in shock and pain. It squeezes me hard, and I push back against its fingers as much as I can. As it stumbles backwards, I'm able to free my shoulders, arms, and hands. I turn on the lights of my palms and shine my lumen directly into its eyes. It's instantly blinded and backs into a wall. and that's when I'm able to pull the rest of my body free and jump. Sam tosses me my dagger, and I charge at the beast, plunging the blade into the skin between every toe. The giant howls. It bends over, and when it does, I shine my lumen again into its eyes. It loses its balance, and I make a boulder behind it dislodge and slam into its lower back. The beast pitches forward, its long arms straight out to break its fall. Its massive hands land in the moat of steaming green liquid, and the sound of its searing flesh comes a second later. I watch as the beast crashes into the base of the electrical force field and the thick stone pedestals holding the chests. The crash disrupts the force field and sends the pedestals flying across the room, breaking against the stone. The beast lies unmoving. "Tell me you planned that," Sam says, following me towards the chests. "I wish I could," I say. I open my chest to find everything inside, including the coffee can of Henri's ashes and the volatile crystal that's wrapped in the towel. "Looks good," I say. Sam picks up the other chest. "What happens when we go through that door?" Sam says, nodding to the small wooden door we came in through. "We killed the beast, and we have the chests, but we can't turn ourselves invisible and just stroll by 100 Moogs. I open my chest and handle different crystals and objects. But again, I have no idea what most of them do, and the ones I do know how to use can't exactly get me through a mountain of aliens. Looking around the room, I'm losing hope. But it's after studying the giant's melting skin and disintegrating bones that I get an idea. With my dagger back in my jeans pocket, I slowly approach the moat of bubbling green liquid. I take a deep breath and carefully dip a finger in it. Just as I'd hoped. It's scalding hot, but merely tickles my skin like fire. It's like green lava. "Sam?"
"Yeah?"
"When I say open the door, I want you to open it and get out of the way immediately."
"What are you going to do?"
he asks. Visions of Henri running the Loric crystal over me as I lie on the coffee table, my hands in open flames, run through my mind, and I dunk my hand into the moat and pick up a dripping scoop of the green lava. I close my eyes and concentrate. And when I open them, the liquid is hovering over my hand in a perfect, flaming ball. "This, I guess," I say.
"Wicked."
Sam runs over to the wooden door, and I nod to show him I'm ready. He rips the door open and dives to his right. A cluster of heavily armed Moogs are running our way, but when they catch sight of the fiery green ball coming their way, they try to turn around. As the ball is about to splash on the chest of the first Moog, I use my mind to spread it out like a fiery blanket. Several Moogs are hit, and after a moment of burning torture, they turn to ash. I wing ball after ball of green lava at more Moogs, knocking them down. Sam collects a pile of their guns, and once there's a lull in the advancement, I grab 2 more balls of green liquid and run out the door. Sam follows me with a long black gun under each arm. The number of Moogs running down the dark tunnel is staggering, and with the flashing lights and piercing sirens, it's a sensory overload. Sam pulls both triggers and mows down row after row of Moogs, but they keep coming. When he's out of bullets, Sam grabs 2 more guns.
"I could use some help here,"
Sam yells, mowing down another line of Moogs.
I'm thinking.
The mucus-covered walls of the tunnel don't appear to lend themselves to spreading a decent fire, and I don't have enough of the green lava in my hands to do enough damage. To my left are the silver gas tanks and silos with their heavy pipes, spouts, and aluminum ducts. Next to the tallest of the silos, I eye the control panel, with electrical wires pouring out. I can hear the screams and roars of the beasts in the barred chambers farther down the hall and wonder how hungry they are. I toss a flaming ball at the control panel, and it disintegrates in a storm of sparks. The bars of the chambers lining the walls begin to rise, and that's when I toss the other green ball at the base of the gas tanks and silos. I grab hold of Sam and sprint with him back into the giant's chamber. As the explosion erupts, I whip Sam against the stone section between the wooden door and the rising steel gate, and allow the advancing wave of flames to sweep over me. My ears are flooded with the crackle and hum of fire. Dozens of crawls burst from their open chamber and attack a series of unsuspecting Moogs from behind. Several Pykans stomp into the tunnel with roars and swinging arms. The reptilian mutant with horns charges towards the back of the tunnel, plowing over Moogs and crawls under the legs of the Pykans. The gargoyle-like winged creatures buzz at the ceiling, swooping down to take a bite out of anything they can. And the monster with transparent skin sinks its rows of teeth into the calf of a Pykan. That all happens in a matter of seconds. Then they're overtaken by a sea of fire. After a few minutes, once the fire escapes up the spiral cavern at the end of the tunnel to continue to wreak havoc throughout the mountain, the long corridor in front of me is littered with ash piles and black monster bones. I extinguish the fire surrounding me and brush my hands off onto my thighs. Sam is singed, but otherwise, okay. "Brilliant, dude," he says. "Let's just try to get the hell out of here, and then we can celebrate." I stick my chest under my arm, and Sam picks up the other. We race through the fire's destruction. The stench of death is choking. The charred ladder at the end of the tunnel appears stable, and with only one free hand apiece, we climb with difficulty. Our feet hit the burned and blackened spiral ledge, and we sprint around and around until we reach the cave center. The inferno I unleashed did much more damage than I thought it would, and we see piles upon piles of ash. But we also see hundreds of Moogs crawling out of different corridors and tunnels on their hands and knees, burned or still on fire, barking in pain, unable to pick up their guns, unable to do anything as we jump over them. There are other soldiers racing above us on ledges, some with weapons in their arms, others with the wounded. I'm confused which way the exit is, and as I lead us through a series of tunnels with my pendant swinging around my neck, Sam and I each pick up a discarded gun. We run with them chest high, firing at anything that gets in our way. Even though we don't know where we're going, we don't stop moving until we come to the cells with human prisoners. That's when I know for certain we've gone the wrong way. I pull Sam in the other direction, but he plants his feet and stops me. I can see the concern and hope on his face. The cells have their steel doors stuck a foot above the floor, and the bubbling blue force fields have disappeared.
"They're open, John," he yells, tossing his chest at my feet.
I drop my gun and pick up the other chest, and Sam finally says what I knew he was thinking.
"What if my dad's here?"
I look into Sam's eyes, and I know we have to check. He runs along the left side of the corridor, yelling into each cell for his dad. I'm investigating the cells on the right when a boy my age, with long black hair, sticks his head under a door. When he sees me, he puts a hand cautiously into the corridor.
"The force field is really gone?" he shouts.
"I think so," I yell. Sam hoists his gun over his shoulder and ducks his head under the boy's cell door.
"Do you know a man named Malcolm Good? 40 years old, brown hair? Is he here? Have you seen him?"
"Shut up and stand back, kid," I hear the boy say.
There's a grittiness to his voice, something that makes me uneasy, and I immediately pull Sam to the side. The boy grips the bottom of the door and rips it from the wall, tossing it into the corridor like a frisbee.
The ceiling cracks, and boulders fall, and I use